Thank you. Can everybody hear me all the way to the back too? When I talk like this? No protests, so okay, I guess. My name is Philip Bayer. I'm going to talk the first half of this talk about crowdsourcing genome-wide association studies. Here's an overview. First me, until the privacy implications, and after that, Basti. So first of all, what are genome-wide association studies? The purpose of genome-wide association studies is to link genetic variants, single nucleotide polymorphisms, to certain traits like eye or hair color, or even probabilities to develop diseases like diabetes or certain types of cancer. What is a single nucleotide polymorphism? What you see here is the DNA of two individuals, and a single nucleotide polymorphism means that a single nucleotide is switched between both. The top one is a GC and the bottom one is a TA, so it's just on one position. And in the lab, if you want to analyze SNPs, you have to use microarrays, which, if you recall high school, are based on the principle that DNA strands bind to their antagonists. So what we have here are fixed probes. And in the middle, we have a fully complementary strand binding. And because these probes are labeled with fluorescent, you can see the light in the lab. And genome-wide association studies work by basically taking a whole population and then grouping it in two groups. Here we have a healthy person and with a nice head, a carrier of a disease. In this example, let's say it's prostate cancer. So if we split them up, we have the healthy people on the left and the prostate cancer people on the right. And then we check certain SNPs, and the SNPs have unique names, always starting with RS and then some number. And because we are diploids, we have two nucleotides at that position. So to the left, you see TT, TG, GG, and to the right, you see GG, GG, TG. And GWAS work by comparing the frequencies then. You can see here our healthy population has TT 33%, 50% TG, and our prostate cancer population has 60% GG. So that's a big difference, and we can link the GG SNP to prostate cancer. And some couple of real-life examples. Sladek et al. Identified four variants which are linked to heightened risk to develop diabetes type 2. There's a slightly weird study by Kogan et al. Which linked one SNP to pro-social behavior. It's not that, it's a bit, how do you say, controversial. And big study, good study is from the Wellcome Trust, which linked 24 of these SNPs to seven major diseases. So there's always a couple of problems with genome-wide association studies. Here we have to have a large enough sample size. We have to correct for multiple testing, and of course, correlation is not always causation. And nowadays, GWAS can be used by the private customer, by direct-to-consumer genetic testing companies, like, for example, 23andMe or DecodeMe. They analyze about a million SNPs and provide a summary of the disease risks together with Ancestry, and it's just $200. It's not much. It's nothing. There's a couple of the companies doing that, and the best thing is that they send you the raw data. They don't lock it up from you. Looks, for example, like that. And 23andMe alone has over 100,000 customers, and according to their numbers, 76% of their customers agree to have their data used in research, and 59% of them shared their phenotypic information with the companies. I have to say, phenotypic information is everything that, which is describing your body, meaning phenotype could be eye color or risk to develop diabetes or skin color, all of that. And there's research going on in these company labs. 23andMe published a couple of studies with up to 3,000 participants of their customers. On the one hand, they were able to replicate older studies, which showed that their approach works. And on the other hand, they found a couple of new associations for Parkinson. And the problem is that people are already sharing their raw data from these GTC companies with other researchers. And about 1 to 5% of all customers of 23andMe would be able to share their data. They would be okay with that. And there's one project going on, the Personal Genome Project, which is open data, but it's closed participation. So not everybody can participate if they even wanted to. And we made a small questionnaire. We asked around 200 people if they wanted to participate or if they wanted to share their data. 68% would share their data, and 26% would share their data, but not with everybody, only with the companies. And only 6% would not share their data at all. And we asked what are the reasons for sharing the data. And you can see here, most of them would share because of possible personal benefits, which we'll talk about later again. And most of them wanted to help scientists with their research. And now I give over to Basti.
Okay, so we are really in favor of doing those open genome-wide association studies, which would allow everybody to do studies on their own, so you don't need a large lab, and the best thing about it, it's already paid for. So if individuals get genotyped on their own costs and make the data available to the public, we all could use the data for our own research. So there are some implications by making your genotypic information public. Sharing 1 million markers with the public is problematic for some reasons, but there are also some good positive consequences out of this. And we have to warn you, it's if you think about this, there are possible extreme bad consequences which could arise out of it. So you should really make sure you know what you are doing if you really want everybody to know about your open data. So on the positive side, first of all, you will gain more knowledge about you. First of all, because if you make your data available to the public, you will get more people which share the same diseases, share the same phenotypic information like you. And it's just patients like me, you get others to share experiences on your diseases or traits. Then it's nice for everybody because it's cheap open science. If you use openly available data for something, you can make nice science without spending a lot of money out of it. And it's not even feasible for trained researchers which have visited universities for a long time, but everybody with an internet access could use such genotyping information for their own projects. And the negative consequences, first of all, it's people might know more about you than you would like them to know. Yesterday there was a talk about forensics, how DNA fingerprinting is used by law enforcement agencies. So this is one thing you should keep in mind. Other things are your boss or your next boss might get hold of the data and may use it in things or in ways you won't like them to do so. So you might not get a job, or your health insurance company will raise their rates or even not insure you at all because of some genetic information that you might develop a risk or have elevated risk factors. Another thing is this knowledge isn't static. Philip said there's 1 billion markers which are tested, but up to now we only have associations for about 30,000 of those markers, so it's nearly still 1 million left which we don't know what they are doing, if they are doing anything at all. So even if you're quite informed about what your genetic information right now says, you have no guarantee that not 2 days from now there will be some publication which links SNP666 to some kind of deadly disease you will develop in 5 years from now, and everybody knows because you published already your data. So make sure you know about this. And, well, your data is not only informative about you, but also about your next of kin. So your parents and especially your own children will have similar information. So I'll illustrate this on my own example. I've published my data already, and it's I have this nice AA allele here, and this means I have 1.6 times higher risk for breast cancer, which might not sound that much, but it's nice to know. But this also says that my dad and my mom will have at least 1A. And this 1A already means that they will have at least a 1.0 times higher risk for breast cancer as well. And with some more elevated statistics, you can even figure out the frequencies of these alleles in the population, and you can get a quite good view on their risk factors as well. So you should make sure that your next of kin might also agree with publishing your data. The same is true if I have a daughter or son someday, and even they will have 1A at least. So again, you can say if they will develop a disease or not just by me publishing their data. So their consent would be needed as well. So possible solutions to this. Yeah, for futures it's hard. So what about laws? Because there are already some laws in place which try to minimize the impact of public genetic information. The first is of the United States, is the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, and this is aimed mainly at insurance companies, so and your future employees. So what it basically says is insurance companies or others may not discriminate you because of your genetic information which may be available because they did some hidden testing without your knowledge. But this does not keep, this is only for basic health insurance, so life insurance, for example, could still be denied because of your genetic information. Here in Germany, we have the Gendiagnostik Gesetz, which is, I think, a bit harder because it basically makes it not that legal to perform those direct-to-customer genetic testing at all. So it's, they sell it here in Germany, but it's still not really clear if they are really allowed to do so. But if you want to get a test, you still can do so. But besides of all these problems and possible inferences with law, we did a platform for those who still want to share. If you are not totally freaked out and say, oh God, those genetic information will kill me, we've built OpenSNP. And what it basically allows you is to upload your data there, your genetic information and phenotypic information as much as you will. And if you are a customer, your benefits out of it is mainly because you get access to really, really many publications or primary literature on genetic information if you're interested in this. For researchers or citizen scientists, it's clear you get data and it's a cheap way to get lots of data to use in your own research. So up to then, there was no central repository for open genotypings. There were about 50 people who already uploaded their data to GitHub or SourceForge, if you remember it, stuff like this. And you had to do a lots amount of research to find all this data if you wanted to use it, and mostly where there was no phenotypic information about diseases, etc. So, yes, we've created it, and people are using it already. And so what it is, it's really open. It's CC0, so it's basically public domain, all the data in there, so it's... yeah, genetic information should not be owned by anybody, we think. So it's really open and can be used for everything you would like to do with it. And yeah, it allows users to annotate phenotypes, and it's completely crowdsourced, so we don't make any suggestions what you should enter or not. People can go there and say, I would like to know your phenotypic information about SAT scores. So, and people already do enter their test results from high school, basically, or on nicotine dependence, hair color, stuff like this, and there's some disease risks, or if there's somebody in the family who develop cancer sometimes. So people are entering this, and everybody can download everything. The only thing that will be kept from everybody is the email addresses and passwords of the users. Besides from this, you can get a complete dump of all the data and perform research with it. And so far, we got 81 genotypings and 207 users. So as we said, we would need 1% at least of 23andMe customers, which would be 1,000 users. So we have 8% so far, and the numbers are rising. So we are optimistic that someday we will have enough data to be used in open genome-wide association studies. So to conclude everything, we think GWAS will be the future of personalized medicine because the numbers of customers for direct-to-consumer genetic testing are rising still. It gets cheaper every year. I think 23andMe started with prices of about $1,000 5 years ago. Now it's 200 euros. So you see the prices are dropping and more people will get genotyped and more people are willing to share their data. As we've seen in our survey, 67% would be willing to share their data. And yeah, it's in the hands of all of us to make or break the situation. So we could make good science out of it, or we could publish total crap like Philip said, the study on pro-social behavior on this. This was done with 23 people, which were genotyped. So the sample size is basically nothing and you shouldn't get published, but somehow they got into proceedings of the National Academy of Science in the US. So yeah, we shouldn't do this. And yeah, we have the chance to take science in our own hands so it gets out of the company walls where 23andMe sits on this large amount of data and the public can't make use of it and other researchers can't use it as well. And so far, we have won the Public Library of Science and Mendeley Binary battle with OpenSNP. And we've got some funding through the German Wikimedia Foundation. So it's only 5,000 euros, but this would be, I think, 25 more people genotyped, which would be public available. And if you're interested in getting genotyped, we will release more details on this in the next year. So yeah, check it out if you want to get genotyped and don't have the money. And yeah, we are constantly improving the project. Currently, we are working on including an API to deliver genetic information using the distributed annotation system, which is widely used in genetics for genome browsers and stuff like this, so others can build third-party tools out of it. And yeah, basically, that's already it. So thanks, and if you have questions regarding privacy and stuff like this, go on.
So you definitely not a switch in speakers or so? Okay. They said they would do a switch in the speaker. So what anyways. Now Q&A, we have again a microphone here running around and one signal angel sitting in the IRC. And apparently there are already some questions. And before I do the, before we start with that, again, if you see any Mate bottles, please bring them out. Yes. So now we can start. The first question, I would say, from the audience, and then we go over to the IRC.
First, thank you for the interesting talk. Was an issue I didn't know about anything, so very interesting. My question, or what you you just make a very short summary, so I think there are lots of aspects we can talk about, but the most interesting for me would be, as you said, if I publish my genome, I cannot see the effect that it will have in the future because of the research which is coming up, which can also be like, okay, there will be a, theoretically, you can tell me what my intelligence is or whatever. So, and the much more interesting aspect, I think, is the impact which it will have for my children and maybe the children of my children and very much aspects so on. And we had like this discussion about post-privacy also. Do you think we will have, like, in the future, like in 100 years, like everybody has a public genome and we will know like everything about everybody? Will this be a possible future, or do you think we will have to go more the way, okay, nobody can publish this because it's too dangerous? What is your opinion in which direction, basically?
Personally, I'd say we're probably landing somewhere in the middle, like people like us publishing it and there's too much information about you in there, so I don't think that everybody's going to release it, and it's too important for the insurance companies and for your kids and everybody. I don't think we're going to have open genomes for everybody. But what do you think?
I differ on this because it's 10 years ago the first human genome was published, and it cost about $3 billion and took 10 years. Now you can do it in a week for about 10,000 euros. So, and this price is still dropping at the same rate, basically. It's Moore's law is slow against it. So we will have the situation where it gets at least affordable. It's not a question of the price. So I think we already see that people get their full genome fully sequenced if they have some kinds of diseases. So it's in medical applications, we already do it. And up to now, we have not figured out how to deal with all the data. So basically, it keeps biologists like Philip and me alive and in job. Yeah, to have all this data. And I think we will get there that all the data is available.
Yeah, but not publicly.
Yeah, if it's cheap enough, you can't stop people from just taking a sample of you. We have heard yesterday in the forensics talk how many DNA you are losing every single second. So I think we'll get there.
So on your website, do you ask for people's names? Or is it important that you have the identity, or could these be anonymous?
Oh, most of them are anonymous. We're not Google. We don't have a real name policy.
Okay, so how do you know if the data is real? Do you get it directly from the company somehow?
We have no way to ascertain if the data is real. We can't say, it could be that you upload your sister's stuff or some from some random stranger, we can't.
Is this much of a concern, or have you thought of systems where you would have a cooperation with one of the companies? Or
it is not yet a concern, of course, but even if we were to work together with a company, I don't know, it's because then we would get the real names, and we don't need them, we don't want them.
Yeah, I think companies will not be willing to give us their data directly, just out of liability and privacy concerns, which is totally... Yeah, it's. I think they won't do it because it's. Yeah, it's still a liability risk. They don't want to get sued because somebody checked a box and didn't really know what he did, so they might not do it. The authenticity of the data, I think there's no benefit from uploading some fake data up to now, so vandalism is not yet a problem. That might be someday. But I don't see the benefit of vandalizing it, so it's not even fun to upload a fake genotyping.
How much actually is the equipment of DNA sequencing today? And can a private person buy it on his own? And when will be the time to buy it on his own to have real sort of freedom? I mean, in a sort of, in a way of open source hardware, DNA sequencing, whatever.
There are some projects which are trying to build do-it-yourself biology DNA sequences. They are not really usable for a complete genome sequencing yet because they are much too slow and the chemicals are too expensive to use it yet. So we won't get there so fast, but I think at 23andMe you can already buy a fully sequenced exome of yourself, so it's all the protein coding regions of your genome for $1,000. So we are getting there, and there are people working on doing it open source.
We've two questions for you. One of them is, have you actually looked at any of the DNA forums that are out there, the forums of ftDNA and 23andMe users? Because they're very, very active, and they'd be interested in something like this. They often submit their data to third-party services. The other thing is, I'm a 23andMe and ftDNA customer, and one thing I have is for my personal records, I'm keeping all my test results on Google Health at the moment because there's nowhere else to store them, and there's no place that I can put my data and give controlled access to it. Is there anything like that on the horizon?
What's the last sentence again?
There's no place that I can put my test results and my data that I can give somebody else controlled access to them. For example, I have results of my supposed susceptibility to side effects in certain drugs and things, and I can't give my doctor access to that. Not easily, anyway.
Yeah. But that's why we have the phenotype system, so you can upload your data and enter your phenotype, for example, the susceptibility to the disease you carry. So that... Did you want to say something? Okay. So that the doctor or other researchers researching that disease can then download your genotype and look at your phenotypes and link them together. That is, just to reiterate for the stream, that's research, not personalized medicine. But we're not there yet. Soon, in the next couple of years, 5 to 10 years.
And yeah, we are active on the 23andMe forums and trying to contact users there who already are sharing.
Okay, so I've got many questions, but here's the question. What sort of accuracy can be expected in a personal genome sequencing test? Is the data repeatable and verifiable? Hard words.
We have a wonderful signal angel at the moment.
That differs from case to case. Sometimes we've seen studies in our database where we linked SNPs to which were just based on 20 Chinese people or 5 Europeans. So it's very hard, and you always have to look at you have to look at it from case to case. It's not always verifiable to answer that question.
Yeah, the example we've seen was a 1.6 times the risk for breast cancer. So this is not really high, but there are some markers which have yes or no, basically. If you have this variance, you will have the following phenotype. If you have the other, you'll have another phenotype. So there are such hard cases, but they are not frequently found yet.
Okay. So another question was, do you plan to offer an open SNP-like platform for other genomes than human, e.g. pigs, mice for university research? Or are there already such platforms?
We don't plan on doing that, but there's lots of DNA databases. For the mice DNA databases, there's everything for everything.
Viruses
too. But what we could do in the future is, like we've already mentioned before, we could make a similar database once exome sequences really takes off, cheap exome sequence. And then we can make a similar project, but we're not at all focusing on any animals.
Yeah, but if you want to do it for other animals, you could do so. The source code is online available, so it's open source. Take it, make it out for pick open SNP and go for it.
Another question is, how much data is there for one person, some GB?
It's 30 megabyte.
Yeah, it's 25 to 30 megabytes. Well, this is just the 1 million markers. The fully sequenced human genome would have about 3 billion base pairs instead of 1 million. So it would get bigger.
A couple of gigabytes for the full human genome.
Hi. It seems you have a kind of basically an upload site and a data sharing policy. And where, you know, what I'm really interested in is the API. And when we have exome data, I mean, what are you thinking? Because there you've got the whole problem of novel markers, how you interrogate that data, and that's where it gets interesting. So are you thinking about this problem? What's your plan to get into novel markers, multi-marker associations, and this kind of, you know, genetic material?
Yeah, in terms of access, we are currently implementing the distributed annotation system, which allows you to query data for a single chromosome for a specific region in a chromosome, so you don't have to download all the data anymore. This would be of a huge help, and I think this is widely used, and it's a standard, so we will search for this.
I think great idea. What would be nice is, like, once you have a lot of users in your database and you have tons of data, it would be nice as a researcher to go in and say, oh, I found these really interesting people, but I would like to interrogate them further onto their phenotyping. So I'd like to get them back into the lab. So if there would be some way I could contact certain people and say, you know, we found these really interesting variations and we'd be interested to, you know, take a blood sample or something and compensate you. Would you be interested in participating in our study? Which could be anything, and if there would be a way I could contact people through your website that I'm interested in, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, we have a small private messaging system, so you can just use that. Just ask the people around.
Yeah, and if it's more users, you won't be able that anybody could just click a button and send 1 million users the same spam message. So if you are interested in sending lots of emails through the system, you as a researcher, just contact us, so we could do this.
So thanks for your nice presentation. I have two questions that are not that related one to the other. So first one is from a data collection perspective. So this is kind of very sensitive data, right? And under the European Commission legislation that has been transposed into national legislations, you need to have special permissions to kind of, you know, host and share personal sensitive data such as this one. So do you have any comment on this? How do you handle this? Also, the licensing thing is kind of weird because CC0 has kind of very weird status under the European Union legislation. So how do you handle this? I'm just very curious. And the second question is, for GWAS, we have very few studies like where you transpose actually your statistical findings, like the probability that this SNP causes this cancer is this. This SNP explains 0.1% of cancer cases, blah. You have very few studies where actually this is verified in the lab. So how reliable actually is the information we get here, even if people put their phenotypical data, and how reliable is this at the end, since we don't have a lab verification? Yep, thanks.
Okay, I'll start on the first question, is privacy terms and terms of services. We are currently working on implementing a system called WeConsent. It's by John Wilbanks, who was the Creative Commons Science Director. And we are working on this. And the idea is, finally, there should be an IRB-approved, so Institutional Review Board-approved form you will have to sign or check and answer questions that you've understood all the terms and services. So this would be the best legal way, and we are working on this.
And for the second question, that's true. It's really hard to verify that stuff later on. And you can't really, it's not really a death sentence if you see this data in your results. So it should be always taken with a grain of salt. And if you see it now, it could be completely changed in 5-10 years. So it's always moving. So right now, I wouldn't trust it 100%. I would wait.
Yeah, but I think it's the best we have up to now for a broader audience. So exome or full genome sequencing is still not affordable for everyone. So we could already make use of the data which is available now.
Okay, one more question. I'm just curious, since this is so sensitive information, do you go and educate the users in some kind of way, or do you just rely on the users educate themselves before they upload their data?
When you sign up for the page, there's a long disclaimer where we educate the user on the possible problems. Longer.
No, it's human readable, not lawyer readable.
And when you upload your data, you're going to see the same disclaimer again. And we also have a blog, opensnip.wordpress.com, where we also even wrote that a bit longer on the possible problems and risks you go into.
Another question anywhere? We have our wonderful video angel. Should I do the front, or do you have a microphone, my dear? Yes. it's late in the evening, and I think he's waiting for Jeopardy, but we have so much time, so we can have many questions.
If I want to upload my data and I already have some knowledge about an association that I do not want to publish, is it feasible to keep this part of information out?
Not really. You could try to redact single SNPs out of it, but as said, the knowledge isn't static. You might not know which new association for the same disease might turn up 2 days from now. So you could try to do so, but it's not guaranteed that it will work.
Ah, he's taking over now.
Well, it was said several times, and it's obvious that it's very sensitive data. And how is it protected against being taken, say, by brute force, be it legal at some point of time or be it illegal? Some people with arms standing in the door and saying, give me your servers. Containing all this genotype and phenotype data and users' emails and stuff which may be correlated with clear names and identities. So it's really, really sensitive stuff.
But the data is open anyway. We don't have to be broken into. To minimize the risk, we don't log IPs. We don't. You can use fake email addresses. We don't verify that. And the only thing that you probably could, the only thing that's not open is the messaging system. That's the only thing we could lose if we got broken into. So if you use a fake email address and if you don't use the messaging system, then you should not be identifiable. But the problem is because the data is so. The data itself is so singular for yourself, we could identify you again based on that data. And there's nothing we can do against that.
It's not for research, right? It's not for research. It's for personalized medicine. So you don't have anonymous this anonymity, right? You have just pseudonymity. So if you are sending, receiving and sending back and forth, so you have a two-way communication and another party, a third party, can rely on that, right? So, and now the trust is broken at one point in time, in 2 years from now or in 100 years from now, but the data is still valid for my grandson or for whoever. So there's no answer to that problem that I see right now.
Because your grandson is not your clone, his data is probably going to be very, very different from yours.
Yeah,
for one quarter, but you're still going to get mixed up data. So even if you now lose all your data, you cannot say everything about your grandson.
My wife is uploading something too, then you know the half at least of my grandchildren. So and so on and so on and so on. It's a never-ending story, right? So if you open the box of the Pandora, you never can close it again.
Yeah, that's true.
It is already open, so that means it's another body's problem then.
One question from the IRC, apparently.
So here's the question. Is the data format for exchange a free one, and which format is it?
Right now, we offer all the data in the same format we get it from, meaning that the 23andMe data we offer is in the format that we got from 23andMe. And all the phenotypic data, if you download this, is just a tab-delimited CSV. What we are trying to do soon is to make up our own small format for easier parsing of everything. That's probably going to come sometime next year, early next year.
Did you have a question?
Some more small comment.
You could do that as well. We have
time. Just an answer to your question, or just because I think it's really interesting to talk about this philosophical aspect of it, or the moral aspect. And I mean, one thing you said that is. And I tend to share this opinion that in the near future we will lose our genetic information so fast and so often that we cannot avoid any way to lose it. And a learning from history is that when we lose our information anyway, maybe it's the best idea to open it up to everybody so that at least we as a people have the same opportunity as the governments or the companies or whoever who has the power to take it away anyway. So maybe it's just the right idea to make it public in this way. Just an idea. I don't have the clue already, but yet.
Would that have helped in 1935?
You're referring to 19... what?
Would having published this kind of data, if the possibility had been then, would have been published the data, say, in Germany in 1935, when there were certain laws about genetically related things were made?
And And I personally would prefer if you would not make a remark about this, because else I think the Nazi would have killed me, because I have a genetic defect which is quite severe. So, thank you. I think, yeah, there was one.
What you see is the main practical, like, sort of way of reconnecting someone's identity with the data that they upload, because it doesn't seem very straightforward. There could be some third party looking at trying to connect an IP address to an upload or something, but say I upload it through Tor, or we have some sophisticated way of uploading data so that you don't know my IP address. What are other ways that you foresee in the future that someone's identity could be reattached to the data that they share? Because to me it seems very difficult, or like they would have to already have all of my DNA anyway, in which case they won't be interested in the data that you have.
I think very recent research shows that you need around 70-75 SNPs to 99.9% identify a person, and because the data set is like a million SNPs, so I just need a very few of your SNPs to back identify you, even if you're anonymous. So that could be a problem in the future.
Yeah, I think basically you're right. It's in the future it will be easier not to just intercept somehow your communication with this platform. You will just grab some DNA out of you and do it themselves and get the million markers for themselves. So it might be easier in the future.
More questions? I see.
I'm confused about two things. First of all, one of the commenters said this was not mainly for research, but for personalized medicine. As I understood it, it's mostly for research, and that users only get something out of this project because if more research is done, they can benefit from this information just as much as everybody else who gets a genotype. Maybe could you clarify that, what the user gets out of the participating in OpenSNP as opposed to just getting their genotyping from a private company like 23andMe. That's the one thing. The other thing is I don't understand the problem. If somebody like took a hair from me in the street and got my DNA and then could backtrack this to my OpenSNP data, they wouldn't get anything from it because they already know who I am and they already got my DNA. So why would it be a problem if they also got my genotyping information from OpenSNP that is already included in my DNA? It's no privacy leak, I think.
Okay, let me just answer the first question. When you get your results from your companies, they'll give you a digest of the current research. And what we do basically is we pass three databases. First of all, the Public Library of Science, which is open access research, then the Mendeley literature database, which encompasses most of the current research, and SNPedia, which is a wiki-like system where people can enter information on SNPs. So what you get as a user is the very, very newest unchanged research. So you can look at the papers themselves, and you can see what's being done, and you can see what people are thinking about it, other than what 23andMe and other companies are telling you about your data.
Well, on the side of privacy, what you might get is your phenotypic information, which if you entered some freakish disease stuff which you can't see or you can't tell anyone about, so then you can connect your genotyping information to this phenotypic information, which wouldn't be possible without uploading it.
So I've got a very famous question. It means, can the featherhood be looked up from the data?
People doing that? No.
Could you just repeat it? Sorry.
Okay. Can featherhood be looked up from the data? Featherhood.
People are not doing that because STRs, what we heard in the talk yesterday, is small tandem repeats, it's cheaper and quicker, but I think you can do that, yes.
Okay.
It's just not done.
Yeah, you usually do this for a wider kinship, so your cousins or uncles or stuff like this, where it's not that easy using str. So there are, we are not doing this because we are not really interested in genealogy and kinship relations stuff. But you can do so, and I think Family Tree DNA is the main provider for genotypings for such reasons. And they do it and have a large database of other people which they can compare you to.